You've already heard the worldview of ABC News, the ACLU, and the National Education Association. Now, tune in for the other worldview. This is Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Welcome to Generations, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director of Christian Home Educators and a pastor, but not an expert. We're here in studio because we are dads and husbands trying to raise our children in a day where, 36% of children are born without fathers. And that's up from 6% in 1960, my friends, an increase of, 600%? Single-parent homes are everywhere today. Fatherless homes, folks, contribute to 63% of youth suicides, 90% of homeless and runaway kids. Fatherless homes account for 85% of youths in prison. I wish we could picture these statistics, and then we would weep, and then we would cry out to God for His salvation. In a world where 36% of children are born without fathers, my friends, the median age for first divorce is 30 years old. The percentage of population divorced is now 10%. That's up from 8% in 1990, up from 6% in 1980. The problem is only getting worse. The number of divorced people have quadrupled since 1970. There is a projection now that marriages have a 50% chance of divorce, and children of the divorced are much more likely to get divorced. If fatherless homes account for devastation among the youth, we are going to reap the whirlwind in the next couple of decades, my friends. There will be huge increases in youth suicides and kids in prison. It's just going to happen. Here's one more statistic. As long as we're throwing out statistics today on this program, red states have a 27% higher rate of divorce than blue states. Now, I don't understand that. Apparently, Republican states have far more divorces than Democrat states. But, Dave, these are all statistics. And you know what? These are real people. These are people that we know. These are family members. These are aunts and uncles. These are my cousins. These are your friends. These are people who show up at your church. They have real names, like Scott and Ann and Sue and Bill. And these children are real children. These are children who are hurt by divorce. They really, really hurt by divorce. It's devastating to a society, yes, but Dave, these are people whose lives have been devastated, and yet God's grace is sufficient, and over the years, God does restore the years the locusts have eaten, but it's tough. It's hard. Does anybody care out there? Dave, I don't want to get divorced. I don't want my children getting a divorce. This is my vision for my family. I cannot accept divorce in my family. I don't want to ruin my marriage, and I don't want to destroy my kids. The statistics are against us today, but today we're going to fight the statistics. We're going to fight them down today on this program because we're going to talk about how to stay married and how men and women get divorced. That next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson.
You are listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson. Deeply embedded on the front lines of the War of the Worldviews, here's your host, Kevin Swanson.
Folks, we're back on Generations. Kevin Swanson here with you, husband of one and father of five. Dave also, same condition. And today we want to talk about staying together, keeping our marriages together, and marital unity. And Dave, you know, there is not as much unity as there ought to be because there are what I call institutional forces that are constantly playing on the marriage, forcing that marriage apart. There isn't the economic unity that we once had in homes. And it is because a foreign worldview has been imposed upon us, a worldview that ultimately came from guys like Plato or Rousseau or Marx, said that you have got to split up the household unity and make sure that everybody has a relationship with a corporation or an economic relationship with a state, but make sure there isn't a unified economic vision in the home. Now, some of the things I have noticed before is if a family, I'm just talking about a secular family here, if a couple These may not even be Christians, but they have a better chance of staying together if they can at least decide on doing something together. If they establish an economic project, let's build a house. Let's build a bigger house. Let's go out and purchase a motorhome. They establish some kind of it could be even a materialistic vision. But the marriage then becomes somewhat unified in that economic pursuit, and I think has, in many cases, a better shot at staying together, only because they have some semblance of an economic project they're working on together.
That's going to take a little commitment. I mean, right now, young ladies are being told that they should plan for their divorce. Economically speaking, they should have their own career, they should have their own checking account, and they should have their own insurance, because that cad they married one day will abandon them, and so they should just plan for the divorce. But economic unity would be planning for unity instead of for separation.
Planning for an economic dependence on one another. That is, okay, honey, here is our economic goal. We want to build a 1,600-square-foot house. We want to raise our 3 to 4 children. It's going to take some work to do this. Let's all pitch in together, and let's work on this economic project together. This, I think, is what we would call economic dependence on one another. If you realize that your wife is essential for your economic success, in other words, she is the other puzzle piece that fits into you to enable you to accomplish the dominion task that God has placed before you, I think there's a much stronger sense of unity there and a much stronger possibility that marriage is going to stay together. Now, if there is a lack of unity between husband and wife, you know, I think the kids can pick up on this sort of thing. And if the kids have picked up upon it, sometimes the kids can use this as a wedge to drive the marriage apart. So there can be a lack of unity in the raising of the children. That is, you know, maybe the husband wants to spank the kids. The wife doesn't want to spank the kids. There is this fundamental disagreement, this fundamental difference in vision relating to the children in the home. And the end result is a lack of unity in that marriage. And those kids can wedge into that and drive it further and further apart. I've seen this happen a number of times in counseling situations.
Even in a good unified marriage, children will always test the unity. It goes something like this. Mom, can I have a snack? She says, I don't know, go ask your father. And then the child goes, Dad, can I have a snack? Mom said it was okay if it was okay with you. And they try and work this little wedge in there. Mom, can I do this? Dad always lets me do it. And they try and work the disunity a little bit. So it's very important, especially in child rearing, that you and your wife or your husband are speaking constantly, giving a vision how things are going to be done, what's going to be done, and also know that children are going to test this.
And that's one of the things I bring up in counseling right away. The first thing I ask a couple would be, what's your vision for your marriage? What's your vision for your life? And my assumption is that they have established some kind of a vision. Usually they'll say something like, we have a vision for a unified marriage. We have a vision for godly children and these sorts of things. And that's great. Now, sometimes that vision breaks down in how that functions, how you accomplish those particular things. But it is critical to cultivate that unity of vision together. It's an economic vision. It's a vision for God's kingdom. It's a vision for raising children. It's a vision for lots of things. But if the father does not see child rearing, his children, as part of that vision, then Dave, he's not going to see that his wife is an integral part of that team. You know, he's going to say, hey, I'm out working every day, you know, raising the $50,000 for the vision for this home, and all you do is sit around all day long and work with these kids. Dave, he does not appreciate the full-orbed concept of the household vision. That is, part of the vision is raising these kids for Jesus Christ. And his wife is doing a big part of that while he's gone.
And in fact, he's missing out on a blessing that God calls a blessing, which is his children, and he will begin to resent his wife because she is spending too much time with her children instead of giving it to him, and he forgets that they're his children. They're their children. That together, the dominion task of him and his helpmeet is to raise those children to Jesus Christ, and he will, instead of embracing the blessing, will end up turning it into a curse.
If we come to the point where we're kicking the kids out of the house, and the wife becomes a secretary for some guy, and the husband has his career, and he doesn't really see that his wife is part of his vision after a while, see, what happens is her career will play into the vision of the corporation, or her boss's vision, but not into her husband's vision, and then you don't have a unified vision. My wife and I were talking this morning about all the cases we remember from the workplace. When we worked in the corporation, she worked in the hospital, I worked for engineering corporations, but all the examples of people getting divorced and marrying somebody at the workplace. Now, why would they do that? Why would a secretary marry her boss? Well, this sort of thing happens all the time because she's sharing her boss's vision. She's working for her boss. But the time she spends with her boss is far more important, far more significant in her life than the time she spends with her husband. And so she does the obvious thing. She doesn't have any unity with her husband, no economic unity, no time with her husband, no vision, no shared vision in the home. So therefore, of course, she's going to run off and marry her boss. That happens all the time.
Well, it makes perfect sense. She spends more time around her boss than she does around her husband, at least waking time. Her boss gives her feedback, tells her she's doing a good job. Her husband probably doesn't. He probably eats that meal, but, you know, doesn't really appreciate it. Doesn't give her the confidence to go and take on new challenges. He's simply joining her for bed and meals. Of course she's going to run off with her boss. And this is also true. She's more likely to make herself up and to dress nicely, and the boss is more likely to dress nicely and make a presentation of himself while they're around each other than they are at home when they put on their sweats and their grubbies and they look their worst.
Yeah, exactly. What we're saying here, my friends, is a word of caution. A wife that works for her husband will tend to create more unity than a wife who works for somebody else outside of the house. That will not tend to create the economic unity and the unity of vision that needs to happen in the unified household, the unified family. And my recommendation is that you share the same bank accounts, or at least the same equal access to each other's bank accounts. This, to me, is a derivative of a unified economic vision. Whenever I see couples that have different bank accounts and nobody gets to touch the other person's bank account, Dave, I assume right away that there is a weak marriage here. There is not unity here. There is the inability to communicate. There's the inability to achieve a unity of purpose and vision in terms of the economic program of the home. They're just all living for themselves, living their own lives, and there is not economic unity. And when that happens, Dave, I'd say 5 to 10 years before there's a divorce.
Well, they're certainly planning for it economically. They're not planning for unity. They're planning for the divorce by the way they've structured their accounts. Now, it's one thing to say that we have this pile of money here, and this is for groceries, and honey, you buy the groceries, so you have access to this pile of money. It's another thing to say you have exclusive access to this pile of money for groceries.
Ladies and gentlemen, talking about unity in the marriage, economic unity. Dave, let's just take a moment and talk about cultivating unity in terms of intimacy, in terms of emotions, and of course, physical unity. 1 Corinthians 7 is very clear there. Make sure you do not defraud one another. That's an old-fashioned word that says don't cheat each other. You don't own your own body. Your wife owns your body, and you own hers, and she cannot claim her own. If you need her, then you get her. If she needs you, she gets you. And as the Puritans used to say, keep the marriage bed hot. I love to quote the Puritans on this because they're often characterized as those that didn't believe in this sort of thing. But no, it's absolutely critical to make sure you've got active sexual physical unity happening in your marriage.
Paul calls it due benevolence in 1 Corinthians 7. If you don't give what is due, there's a word for that. It's called stealing.
Economic unity, physical unity, and Dave, I'm going to throw in emotional unity as well. Guys know a lot about physical unity. I think we think about it more than our wives do. But what about that emotional connection? I think it's important that we work for an emotional connection, an emotional unity between man and wife. I was just reading this morning from Song of Solomon chapter 4. I was thinking, man, this is great. Where the man looks at his wife and he says, how beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. You have made my heart beat faster, my bride. How beautiful is your love, my bride. How much better is your love than wine. As you read that, you could tell this is emotional charge. This guy is emotionally connecting with his wife. And how many husbands have a hard time connecting in that way, just looking into the eyes of his wife and saying, I love you, honey. I need you. You are mine. I am yours. And really meaning it, not just saying it because you heard it on a movie somewhere, but meaning it and emotionally connecting there. I'm not sure that sort of thing happens enough.
Probably not, and I think that has to do with the total unity of a husband and wife. There's a spiritual unity that certainly spills over into the emotions. Peter tells husbands to live with their wives in an understanding manner. That means we need to understand that they're also emotional. We need to understand their emotions, and we need to be able to lead their emotions, basically lead them in righteousness, lead them into unity in the marriage.
And this unity, my friends, is created by a complementation. There is a complementation here, not a competition. Now, the world has imposed this idea of competition, that the man and the woman compete with each other. But God presents it as a complementation. The woman is a help meet for the man who is the dominion taker. She isn't identical to the man. She is a little different. She's different physically. She's different emotionally. She's different in terms of her spiritual makeup in some ways. And indeed, God comes to us spiritually and says the woman has a different spiritual role in the home than does the man. And this is incredibly important, Dave, for the complementation of the marriage and the creation of unity. And that is, God looks at the woman and says, you need to submit to your husband. You need to obey him. And then he looks at the husband and says, husbands, you need to love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. Dave, this is a different message to husband and wife, but it's a complementing message. I like to think of it as puzzle pieces that sort of fit together. They're different in shapes, but when they come together, they form a unity.
Kevin, I like to think of marriage, a unified marriage, as a wonderful ballroom dance where you have two people who are dancing as one. Within that couple, there's one who is leading. If they're fighting over who's going to lead, something bad's going to happen. Somebody's going to get some toes stepped on, but somebody leads and somebody follows. When that's performed properly and correctly, they do form one unit out there dancing together, and it is beautiful.
And I have noticed that typically wives that refuse to submit to their husbands are going to reduce their husbands into either lifeless wimps or abusing wife beaters. And this is typically the way it goes. When a wife refuses to submit, the husband becomes a sort of lifeless wimp or abusing wife beater. On the other hand, typically men who never love their wives reduce their wives into these angry, bitter, twisted, ugly people. So, Dave, you know, each of those have to bring something to that marriage. And God says, men, you bring love. You bring self-sacrificial love. And wives, you submit, humbly submit and obey your husbands. And here's the challenge for marriages. How does submitting and loving work out in an argument? Who's going to submit and who's going to love in the argument? When do you give in to your wife, for example? These questions go through my mind all the time. Should the husband ever give in to his wife because he loves her? I think a husband always insists on his way because his wife should submit to her, to him, is not really loving his wife. He's not loving her enough to listen to her opinion and to give in to her wants. Now, if he comes back and says he's infinitely wise enough to know that her wants are never her needs, then my guess is he's got a pride problem here. So again, we're talking about hard issues here, talking about humbling yourself and loving your wife and giving in to her when it's appropriate. And when is it appropriate? When wisdom dictates that, and wisdom is rooted in whether or not you love. You see how this is connected here, Dave.
It's very interesting because recently, very recently, I read an author who was writing on marriage, and he claims that one of the reasons that his marriage has been so happy and successful is he's never won an argument. And yet, I'm wondering if he's leading that marriage. I heard another guy say that him and his wife came to an agreement when they got married. He was going to make all the major decisions, and he was going to defer all the minor decisions to his wife. And he said, so far, they've had no major decisions to make.
Ladies and gentlemen, today, unified marriage. And if we use God's principles, we will create a rock-solid marriage by the grace of God. And, Dave, I referred to this, but I think another problem is pride and the inability to forgive. One songwriter said, it's my belief that pride is the chief cause in the decline in the number of husbands and wives. And I really believe that if we are humble, if we are humble, then we will love. If we are humble, we will submit. If we have that humility before God to acknowledge that we are sinners. And, you know, because no marriage is going to be perfect. But when you fail, at least to have the humility to come before your wife and say, honey, I have sinned against you. I have sinned against you. And weep before her. Weep over your sin before her and before God and say, you know what? I need your forgiveness. I need your forgiveness. I am confessing my sins. There are no ifs, ands, or buts here. I am responsible for what I did. I did not love you in that last argument as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And I just need your forgiveness. And, of course, she needs to offer it. The other side needs to offer it. Otherwise, bitterness will kill that marriage as well.
Well, Kevin, one of the sociological reasons now that marriage is broken down is that there are not good examples. We have people who are getting married who did not have parents that provided a good example. They have never seen a unified marriage. They don't know how to look for it in the Bible to see what a unified marriage looks like. And so they're copying the bad examples that they've already received. But really, if you get inside the marriage and you look at it, the reasons divorce rate is so high is because husbands refuse to love their wives as Christ loved the church and lead her, and wives refuse to submit to their husbands in the way that the church is to submit to Christ. If we could get those things down, my guess is we'd have virtually no divorce.
Well, folks, lots of reasons why the unity of the household is broken up. We've got institutional problems. We got emotional, sexual, physical, sometimes spiritual disunity in the home. Just a few other things. Discontentment and boredom can be a significant problem. There's even a television program on this. I don't know if you've heard about it, Dave. Desperate Housewives. Discontented, desperate housewives, and husbands have the same problem too. Much of it is due to the fact that we have very little vision for the home. We get bored, we lose vision, we begin to become discontented, and ultimately, Dave, what is it but a lack of vision for the kingdom of God and a lack of gratitude to God for the wonderful marriage that God provided to us? Our wives are a gift from God and ought to be considered that way. We ought to honor them that way and consider them precious and be very grateful to God for what he has done. Ladies and gentlemen, today we don't have much more time, but we would like to recommend some resources to you that can be very helpful to creating this unified marriage that we're speaking of on this program. Martha Peace's book, The Excellent Wife, and Stuart Scott's book, The Exemplary Husband, are two of the best resources out there today on creating a unified marriage. Again, Martha Peace's book, Excellent Wife, and Stuart Scott's book, The Exemplary Husband. You can get these books by going to our website, kevinswanson.com. And clicking on store. And folks, you can interact with the program by emailing me at Kevin Swanson. And folks, you can interact with this program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.